Blog Talk Radio.
Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. Star Price is the executive producer of the Showtime series, Penn & Teller, Bullshit. The show, now in its fifth season, chronicles the efforts of confirmed skeptics and pro-science atheists, Penn & Teller, to debunk, well, bullshit. Their mission is to expose the truth to an otherwise desperate and gullible public. Most people have seen Penn & Teller somewhere, usually on a talk show, performing incredible feats of magic. On this show, they use all the tricks of their trade, including good old-fashioned hidden cameras, to reveal rip-off artists, scammers, and hoaxsters. And Star Price is a writer, producer, director who's worked in television since 1978. In recent years, he's made a career in reality television, including credits on programs such as Real Stories of the Highway Patrol, MTV's Celebrity Undercover, TLC's How'd They Do That, and Confirmation, the Hard Evidence of Aliens Among Us, for NBC. He's also recently co-executive produced the reality series Exploring the Unknown and Scariest Places on Earth for the Fox Family Channel, Amazing Race 2 for CBS, Extreme Makeover Home Edition, the pilot, for ABC, and Hotel Hell for Fox. Star, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
How did you get involved with Penn & Teller?
Well, it's a long story, actually. Mark Wolper, who's another executive producer of the show, had sold Showtime a concept on doing a show debunking popular myths and beliefs of the day. And he just had that kind of one-sentence idea, and he had brought in Penn & Teller as a way to kind of comedically do it, but no one had really thought, how would this work? And I think it's almost a surprise to him, he sold the show, and they ordered 13 episodes, and then he had never really done a documentary series, and so he called me and said, can you figure out how to do this? I was kind of like thrown into it, and went out to Las Vegas and met with Penn & Teller, and we hit it off, and we kind of developed the show together on very short notice, and it became what it is. It's a fun show to do.
Now, Penn, at different times, I've gotten the sense that he would really like to be on TV maybe more regularly than he is, but maybe has not found quite the vehicle. But this seems to really fit.
This fits perfectly for him. I mean, this show is a dream come true for him. He's both Penn & Teller are both incredibly intelligent people and well-read and well-versed on every political issue and cultural issue of the day, and they're fascinating people. And to have a show where they could just kind of state what they believe about almost anything, I mean, that just doesn't exist for anybody. And mm-hmm. for them, it's just a dream come true, and they love doing it, and we love doing it with them.
So Wolper didn't necessarily have them in mind when he came up with this thing. He just kind of fitted them to the concept.
Yeah, his idea was, you know, no one's going to want to see a show where we just debunk something unless there's another spin to it. And he had the idea, I think he was on an airplane, he was flipping through a magazine, he saw an interview with them where they said, Penn said in the magazine interview that he, you know, was a big debunker, a big skeptic of a lot of things. And the light bulb went on over Mark's head, and he had the insight of calling them, and I believe he called them and mentioned on the phone, they were like, we're in. So it was an unusual marriage, you know, that they'd never really done a documentary series before. They're known for doing, you know, magic specials.
Right.
But they're both avid skeptics, and it fit right up their alley. And so the show kind of became a combination of debunking things, and we knew because they were Penn & Teller, we had to let them do their shtick, too. We had to let them do magic. So if you see the show, you see that it's a weird, kind of a weird combination of them doing magic and then debunking or looking into a cultural issue of the day. and it works. And I'm not even sure exactly how, but it works. And it's kind of this weird cross between Penn and Teller and my sensibility. We've kind of come up with this weird show, and you know, we're about to premiere our fifth season, and there's no end to it. We've found a way to keep doing stories for, I think, a long time.
What are they like to work with day in and day out?
They're great. They're great. They're both you know, fascinating people and so smart. And you know, oftentimes we can get into a conversation where we forget that we're actually making a TV show. We'll just get into talking about an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're fascinating conversationalists because they're so well versed on everything, and they come to each topic idea that we do with a very strong point of view. I mean, if you ask them, if you bump into them on the street and ask them about anything, you know, they usually have a strong opinion. They're both very libertarian in their beliefs, so politically we kind of, you know, fall on the I guess you would say the conservative side when it comes to you know, fiscal things, size of government, you know, and fall on the liberal side when it comes to social issues.
Mm.
But they have a strong opinion on everything, and you know, and that as a producer, that makes it's a pleasure to work with, because you know exactly where they stand,
mm-hmm.
and so you know exactly where you need to go.
Now, I'm curious about that, because yeah, I mean, they do have a strong. Anytime I've ever seen them, and of course you know you're familiar with what Penn has to say because Teller doesn't really say much. But I, just by coincidence, this afternoon, Howard Stern on Sirius ran one of their master tape theater repeats, and it was June 1993, and he had Penn on, and Howard was saying something about. That they do a show similar to David Copperfield, and oh, he just, you know, he got very upset with that, and you know, was basically trying to debunk Copperfield's work, and this was something that was 14 years old. So,
yeah.
I mean, he has been consistent in that. But,
oh yeah, very much so. Well, their whole act is kind of a debunking of magic,
mm-hmm.
as much as it is a celebration of magic. If you've seen their show, they'll do magic, but part of the fun of it is that they will show you how it's done. And show you how easily you can be fooled, and kind of take you a little bit kind of behind the scenes of it all.
Mm.
And it's been their whole approach to it for 30 years.
Mm.
And as a result, that's why we brought that sensibility to the show, in that we'll look at a topic, you know, if it's like psychics or you know, people who believe in ghosts or whatever, and they'll walk you through why it's BS, and they'll do it with their stand-ups to kind of inventively show that there's another reality that you're not seeing,
mm.
kind of like what they do in their magic tricks.
Now,
so it actually is a natural fit.
Star, most of the shows that you've worked on is either reality or documentary-oriented, not really star, pardon the pun, but not really star vehicles. Was it difficult to get used to working with these? I mean, these are bigger-than-life personalities.
Well, they are, yeah, they are larger than life. They're larger than life in the room.
Are they really?
Yeah. Well, he's huge. He's a big man and booming voice and a strong opinion. And Teller, even though he doesn't talk in the act, you know, is very talkative. You know, when the camera's not on.
Aha.
And is very much a part of the whole process as much as Penn is. So. Yeah, it was, to be honest, it was a little bit of an eye-opener for me because, as I said, they do have such a strong point of view. But, you know, it's also a blessing because, like I said, I know exactly where they stand. And we get along great. I mean, it's a hard show to make. It doesn't look like it. It looks like a breezy show, but we have a huge staff of researchers and writers and producers putting together what is, in effect, 10 individual documentaries a season.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has to make a strong argument and be convincing in terms of what Penn and Teller believe. So if we go after something like, you know, the death penalty, we can't just make jokes about it and do magic tricks. We have to back it up with some serious, you know, facts and interviews and so forth. So that's hard enough. But to go in knowing exactly where the hosts stand, it makes it easier, actually.
Before you got involved in this, and since, I guess, would you have described yourself as skeptical about some of the issues that you've tackled, or are you more skeptical now?
That's a good question. Well, I think I'm much more skeptical now. I think I was a pretty open-minded person when I started the show. I didn't believe in UFOs and aliens or ghosts, but I think I was more on the fence about things like the death penalty or whether prostitution should be legalized or things like that. And I think working with them and making the episodes on those topics, I kind of saw these topics, in the same light as they do. So I think I've become more skeptical.
Hmm. Would it matter to them if you were not skeptical? If you were, if you were diametrically opposite of the way they felt about these things? You and David, Mark, for that matter.
Yeah, to their credit, they've never asked me.
Ah.
It's never been like a litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first met them, they never said, it's important to us that you believe A, B, and C like we do, or we don't want to work with you. It was when they saw that I was going to, my job was to present their point of view, even if it disagreed with my own,
mm-hmm.
and that I consistently, I think we've done that. I think it's kind of become a mood issue. Tell you the truth.
Do you have a favorite topic and/or episode from the four previous seasons, or of course, I know you probably want to tell me about something that's coming up in this season, but either way.
It's funny. We were just sitting around the other day, and we were all talking about our favorite episodes, and my favorite episode is not necessarily one that I think it's not because I think it turned out so well,
mm-hmm.
but because I had so much fun making it.
Oh.
It did turn out well, but it was this, an episode we did in the first season called End of the World, which was about all the people that think the world is about to end.
Ah.
People who believe in Nostradamus and all his writings, and people who read all the Left Behind books, which are a big publishing sensation. And there's a whole subculture of people that believe in the coming apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
They usually all have a book to sell or it's a lot of that. And the episode was, it was an episode that I can't remember why, but it was difficult to shoot, and it came together at the very end, and we had 2 days to edit it. Usually we spend a month editing each segment.
Wow.
And we had, we were very disorganized our first season. We had 2 or 3 days to edit it, and it was just a real, 72 hours straight, a bunch of writers and me in a room with an editor, and we laughed our butts off and came up with this episode that I think holds up really well. It was a real kind of intense but rewarding experience during that one episode, so I always look fondly at that. But I think we've done, I'm really proud of the episode we did on PETA, which got a lot of attention. I'm really proud of the episode we did on the Boy Scouts.
The Boy Scouts. Now, I didn't see that. What did you guys do with the Boy Scouts?
Well, we didn't do what some people think we did who haven't seen the episode. We didn't blast the Boy Scouts as a group. We kind of criticized what they've become and how they were they've been kind of taken over. Excuse me, by
aliens.
No, not aliens. But, it's largely run by the Mormon Church now.
Really?
Yeah. And it's become not directly, but it's a big involvement by the Mormon Church, and it's become very homophobic, anti-gay, and very anti-atheist.
But the Boy Scouts are encouraged to date 2 or 3 girls at a time.
No.
Yeah.
But our whole contention was that's nobody's business. And, and how the Boy Scouts started was as a much different group, and with very noble and wonderful intentions.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's become kind of a group that is not as diverse as we think it should be to reflect the rest of America and, of all things with children. It seems like it's not fair to stigmatize some kids for what they believe in or who they are. So we did that episode. I was very proud of it.
How hard is it to promote a show, bullshit, where, I just like being able to say it, where no newspaper in the country will publish the program's name?
Yeah, well, that's our biggest frustration. But it's also, I think it's what makes it rewarding. We get no publicity.
Mm.
I mean, Showtime, is as much as they'd like to, they can't.
Yeah.
We can't get an ad in the newspaper. We can't, get a magazine ad or billboard ad, commercials on the other, CBS, Viacom, platform because of the title. Now, for a while, they thought that they would just push the show as being called BS.
Mm-hmm.
But even that rubs people the wrong way. So, you know, what sounded like a great idea at the beginning, hey, let's call our show bullshit, it'll get attention, and it did the first season, kind of has prevented us from being pushed as much as we would like. But having said that, I think the title does, it is what the show is. It sums up in one word what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of ensured that it has become kind of a cult show, which I'm very happy to be,
mm-hmm.
Because we do very well for the network. They don't have to advertise us, primarily because they can't.
Right.
So it doesn't cost them much money, and so they're happy, and we do very well in the ratings for them. And, it's been good.
Could the show ever be edited for, more basic cable channel the way Sopranos and Sex and the City and The Wire have?
It's impossible.
Really?
Yeah, it's impossible. We actually, part of our duty for the network is to deliver them two versions of every episode, one that they air and one for what they call free television. It's just kind of a thing you just do on every show that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where those episodes ever play. I don't think they play anywhere, but they're pretty comical because there's literally a bleep every 10 seconds or a blurred shot every 10 seconds. So it's really unwatchable. So, I really don't think our show could. But that's fine. You know, in today's media world, there's so many different ways to watch things. So a show like ours doesn't have to exist on another free thing. I think with like iTunes downloads, mm-hmm. we're going to be on that soon, all of our episodes.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah. So, I think our audience will even grow.
Now, I part of the reason I was looking forward to talking to you today was your background in so many other types of reality shows and documentary programs. Can we run through some of the titles and maybe you can give me a little behind the scenes or something anecdotal? Let's start with Real Stories of the Highway Patrol. It's a classic.
Oh, you remember it?
Of course.
Oh, wow. Well, you're probably about the only one. I'd be surprised that too many people do, but that was a great great experience. I traveled the country shooting these reenactments with state police of different states. I went to a lot of the southern states, Arkansas, Tennessee, and I would go down and shoot these elaborate reenactments of true crimes.
Mm.
But the show was very low budget, and it was just me getting off a plane, and I'd have to corral, quote-unquote actors from the town to play some of these people, and oftentimes I'd be going down at my motel to the guy who worked behind the front desk and say, you want to play a cop? So it was a real kind of seat-of-the-pants, Andy Hardy movie type thing on the road.
And how many episodes were made?
Oh, they made a ton.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Hundreds, yeah. And it went forever. But I worked on it, I think, 2 years.
Mm.
And it was a great learning experience as a director because I had to just pull it all together and shoot fast and think fast and, pull something together in a day.
Mm.
So it was rewarding.
And what about Celebrity Undercover for MTV?
That was a great show. That was a show, it's a hidden camera show for MTV, where we took celebrities had them, quote-unquote accidentally bump into a fan that was their biggest fan. And it was all hidden camera. And this biggest fan, would bump into their dream person and have this kind of adventure that we'd kind of manipulate. And it was a very sweet show. These people were, like, overwhelmed to be able to spend an afternoon with their favorite celebrity and not know that it was all on camera.
Mm.
And it was a fun show.
Now, do Penn and Teller know that you worked on a program called Confirmation, the Hard Evidence of Aliens Among Us?
That did come up.
Yes. Tell me about that. That must have been a good conversation.
Yes, that did come up. And, you know, actually, I think they got a kick out of that. That was back when I was it was a job. It was a job for hire.
Mm-hmm.
And NBC was going to make the show regardless. And I had the opportunity to get on and write and direct and show run the whole thing. And I was open-minded. I didn't really think much about UFOs or aliens. I didn't know whether I believed them or not. So NBC said, we want this to be the definitive two-hour look at the whole UFO alien thing. Find out exactly what's happening.
Oh, sure. Sure, it's easy. Everybody, the information is right out there.
Yeah. So as we got into it, you know, I started to see in that project, as I was making it, how, you know, what bullshit there was in all the quote-unquote classic stories of abductions and UFO sightings.
Hmm.
Things that, you know, you or your listeners have probably seen or heard about for years, whether it's Roswell or anything else. We really looked into this stuff for months, and they're all garbage. However, as I started to say that to the network, they didn't want to hear that. It was like, well, can't you just kind of make it look like it happened? And then they put that awful title on it. So it really ended up becoming kind of a two-hour booga-booga, you know, promotion of all alien and UFO stories when, you know, I had discovered, but while making it, that they were all pretty much garbage. So,
yeah.
You know, going into bullshit after that, it was kind of my redemption. I wanted to make up for my experience on that.
So bullshit was actually the shower you took after working
exactly.
on Confirmation. I see.
Yes,
I see.
Exactly.
And what about scariest places on Earth, and was my high school among them?
That was a fun show. It's still running. I think they're doing more of them. It's on the...
Really?
Yeah, it's on the ABC Family, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a fun show. We would take people and put them through a place that had a legendary ghost, legend
mm-hmm.
behind some castle in Scotland or whatever, and we would make them go through it all night and kind of have fun with them, with some special effects and stuff. Scare the bejesus out of them. And that's really what the show was, just scare people to death. But it was fun to do that.
Now, you worked, I think, on the second season of Amazing Race?
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting show to me. It's been on. It's won awards. It's, it's considered very, very highly in the genre. But I swear, and I watch these shows, I swear I have never had a single person say a word to me about having watched it or looking forward to watching it or discussing the winners. Tell me something about that show. Why is it so highly regarded but maybe not watched in the same way as Survivor or,
Well, it actually does really well
for
CBS. It doesn't do Survivor numbers, but it consistently does very well. And it is very popular amongst, some people.
Was it a fun show to make?
It was a hard show to make. Very hard show to make. But I think that the reason it is popular is because, a lot of these reality shows, supposed reality shows, you get the sense that the people that are on it are kind of wannabe actors or they're playing the type of person that they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it all feels kind of phony.
Mm.
But with Amazing Race, and I think even on that show, the people that get chosen to be in it think that, you know, I'm going to be the such and such person. I'm going to be the funny one, or I'm going to be the clever one. And they go in thinking that they can kind of be somebody that maybe that they're not.
Right.
And what happens within 10 minutes of the start of that race, that's gone. Because it is so frantic that their true selves are exposed. And I think that's what's so brilliant about that show is that they put these people through such a ringer, and I saw it firsthand, that their core personalities are revealed.
Mm.
Oftentimes not so flattering light.
Yeah.
And I think the viewer can see that. They can see that, boy, there's a lot of shows, a lot of reality shows that are a lot of BS, but this one's real.
My wife and I have been hooked on Big Brother every summer since it began.
Right.
And the thing about that has been that, to us anyway, I think that the first couple of weeks It's like, oh, they're still, you know, they're being a character, they're being someone. But after they've been in that house for, you know, week after week after week, and you know, the cameras are on them 24/7, you start seeing who they really are. And sometimes it's time to change the channel because, you know, a character might have been better.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Now, what is the mark, and just a couple more questions, but what is the mark of a really good reality series?
Well, there are different types of reality series. I think the ones that are competitive, like Amazing Race, I think it's what makes that show so strong. Is if you can come up with a concept that cuts through all the BS and really reveals real people under strenuous situations, and you get to see what they do under pressure and so forth. I think people are very compelled by that.
Hmm.
They like to relate with that. They like to think, what would I do if I had to eat, you know, rats? What would I do if I had to run through, you know, across that bridge, that rickety bridge on Amazing Race, or bungee jump, or whatever, you know? So what shows that do that, I think are very compelling and always make great television. You know, but reality is all, I hate that term, first of all, reality. I mean, it's such a dumb term for the genre. Because, and it, what it's become, it encompasses so many different types of programming. I mean, we get nominated every year for Best Reality Show for an Emmy.
Mm-hmm.
We are not a reality show. We're a comedy documentary series. But there's no other show like ours, so they kind of lump us into reality. So for better or for worse, we are a reality show. There's different types. I mean, like for our show, it's a totally different type of show than Amazing Race. But I think if they have anything in common, this genre called reality, is that it's something that you know, maybe strikes at the core of the viewer as to what it's like to, this may sound kind of cheesy, but to kind of be alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in Amazing Race, you know, that's a very intense situation for these people, and you like to watch it and relate and think, what would I do? If you're watching Bullshit, we tackle a topic that you might relate to, death penalty, Boy Scouts, prostitution, you know, whatever. And you think it kind of targets, you know, what it's like to live with in our day and age.
Mm.
And I think a lot of the, you know, sitcoms or one-hour episodic cop shows or whatever, I think they've started to feel a little bit stale because they've been around so long and they do the same tricks.
Well, we've pretty much seen every possible medical, lawyer, science fiction sitcom that you could really imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's ahead for you? Obviously, I'm assuming that it doesn't take you 12 months of the year to do 10 episodes of Bullshit.
No, it takes about 6 months.
Okay. And what do you do the rest of the year? What will you be doing coming up?
Sleep.
Sleep, all right.
Recover. No, I'm doing a few things. I'm about to do a pilot with Penn Jillette, actually, for a late-night talk show.
Oh, I heard about that. You're involved in that.
Yeah, for Showtime. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a really funny idea, which I cannot tell you anything about. I'm sworn to secrecy, but it's a very smart show. I'm excited about that.
Does it involve horny manatees? No, sorry.
Probably. I'm pitching a lot of other stuff and developing a lot of other stuff and, you know, staying busy.
Very good. Well, Star, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media this week.
You bet.
If you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media on the Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.